Following are some comments on William Shakespeare's The Tempest, Act 1, from Prospero and Miranda's tense conversation with Caliban in Scene 2, through the end of the act. This island's mine by Sycorax, my mother. Caliban argues with Prospero and Miranda over their respective narratives of the recent past, but in the end, Prospero's threats compel him to obey. By way of introduction to Caliban, since we will soon encounter him here in Act 1, Scene 2, Shakespeare's was a great age of exploration, and European countries were busily colonizing and exploiting the New World. The quest motif is very strong in romance generally, and a sense of adventure, magic, wonder, and strangeness pervades the entire genre. Exploration is itself matter for exploration, which in part explains why many critics writing about The Tempest have seen Ariel and Caliban's circumstances in terms of colonial discourse and practice. This isn't to say that the play itself comes down in favor of Caliban's perspective, but there's little doubt that this romance play catches some of the enthusiasm in the air of Elizabethan Jacobean England for exploration. And just as little doubt that Shakespeare's representation of Caliban can plausibly be taken, partly as a thoughtful consideration of how natives, so-called, might process the approach of European cultures, with their high-handed claims of superiority and their demands for permanent submission. With the firm establishment of cultural studies and colonial post-colonial studies, these readings will continue to be a force in the criticism on The Tempest. When Prospero is nearly done giving orders to Ariel, we are treated to our first encounter with Caliban. At his hostile best, he responds spitefully to Prospero's demand to fetch wood. Quote unquote, "There's wood enough within." Act 1, Scene 2, Line 314. This earns him threats of lesser torture from Prospero, including pinching by spirits in the form of hedgehogs, called urchins at line 326. Defiantly, Caliban insists that the island belongs to him. Quote unquote, "This island's mine by Sycorax, my mother, which thou takest from me." And he testifies to his gratitude for the affection, food, and language given to him by Prospero and Miranda. Quote unquote, "And then I loved thee and showed thee all the qualities of the isle." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 331 through 332, and lines 336 through 337. But now he says he is a prisoner, an exile in his own land, and he curses himself for believing in their goodness. This, then, is Caliban's narrative about the coming of these two Europeans to his native island. There are two native encounter narratives at work here, one in which Caliban graciously welcomes Prospero and Miranda, and one in which he betrays them when they try to pass along to him their ways and language. We soon hear Prospero and Miranda's counter-narrative. The old Duke, who seems to associate Caliban with the devil or with unregenerate man, upbraids him with the epithets lying slave and filth, and between him and Miranda, the story is that Caliban was at first invited to share their quarters and was treated with, quote-unquote, humane care. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 344 and 346. This continued until Caliban attempted to rape Miranda, an attempt that Caliban admits, and only then, they say, was he exiled to keep him from repeating this outrage. Miranda's address to Caliban is furious and condemnatory. She calls him an, quote-unquote, abhorred slave, and seems particularly incensed that her gift of language did so little good. Act 1, Scene 2, line 350. Her pedagogical efforts, she suggests, came to naught because of the pupil's inherent temperamental inferiority. Quote-unquote, "But thy vile race, though thou didst learn, had that in it which good natures could not abide to be with." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 357 through 359. Caliban's retort is magnificent. Quote unquote, "You taught me language, and my profit on it is I know how to curse. The Red Plague rid you for learning me your language." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 362 through 364. It's reasonable to suggest that Prospero and his daughter are unfair to Caliban. To say that he is, quote-unquote, capable of all ill, as Miranda does, is to say something of him that is true of humanity in general. Everyone is susceptible to all sorts of impulses, be they good or bad. Act 1, Scene 2, line 352. Caliban is not simply, quote-unquote, malice, as Prospero calls him in morality play fashion. Act 1, Scene 2, line 366. All in all, this native islander has resources within himself that his European captors do not recognize, and this failure will soon put Prospero and Miranda at risk. Even so, for now the bitter argument between masters and servant ends with Caliban's abject submission. He is terrified of the pain that he knows can always be inflicted upon him at the magician's merest whim. Quote unquote, "I must obey," says Caliban in an aside. Quote unquote, "His art is of such power it would control my dam's god Setebos and make a vassal of him." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 371 through 373. To Caliban, Prospero seems all but omnipotent. In The Prince, Machiavelli insists that a prince should rule so as to be respected and even feared, but not hated. The exchange we have just covered suggests that here on the island Shakespeare has conjured for us, that is not the existing relationship between ruler and ruled. Caliban loathes Prospero, and he feels lustful contempt for Miranda. Full fathom five thy father lies. Ferdinand comes ashore, immediately falls in love with Miranda, and is put to the test by Prospero. In Act 1, Scene 2, once Prospero has finished scolding Caliban, it's time to bring Ferdinand into the picture. The young prince is enchanted by the music of Ariel and drawn on by it. According to Marjorie Garber in Shakespeare After All, Ariel's first bit of song, quote-unquote, "Come unto these yellow sands and then take hands," can be read as encapsulating the action of the entire play, in part from Ferdinand's perspective. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 374 through 375. Garber emphasizes that Ferdinand comes ashore and joins hands with Miranda, thereby quelling the chaos of the storm. Then, the spirits work to facilitate the play's decorous conclusion. If we read the song that way, we will get the strongest possible sense of how firmly in control Ariel and his fellow spirits are when it comes to executing Prospero's master plan. The music, we might add, comes to Ferdinand at a supremely vulnerable moment. A moment in which, he says, he was, quote-unquote, "sitting on a bank, weeping again the king my father's wreck." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 388 through 389. Ariel's next effort is among the most haunting of Shakespeare's songs, beginning with, quote-unquote, "Full fathom five thy father lies, of his bones are coral made." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 395 through 396. This song is not an accurate description of King Alonso of Naples at the time of its singing. Although Ferdinand won't know it until the end of the play, Alonso hasn't drowned, and even if he were lying 30 feet, or 5 fathoms, underwater, he wouldn't yet be transformed in the fantastical and complete manner implied by the song's lyrics. Quote unquote, "Those are pearls that were his eyes," and so forth. Act 1, Scene 2, line 397. But we should take the song in a less literal way and recognize that the sea change into something rich and strange, quote-unquote, is death itself. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 400 through 401. Ferdinand doesn't know what to make of the song, other than that it is a memorial to his supposedly dead father, and is, quote-unquote, no mortal business. Act 1, Scene 2, line 405. What should we make of it, then? Perhaps the song's aim is to transform the image of the king in his son's imagination so strongly that he begins to understand the need to let him go. A point that Ferdinand soon comes round to since he starts describing himself as the King of Naples. In part, therefore, the song may distance Ferdinand from his father's death, perhaps because the trials and transformation he is to undergo on the island leave him little time to grieve for a royal father lost. In a sense, Ferdinand, too, is about to undergo a, quote-unquote, sea change into something rich and strange. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 400 through 401. When his elders actually die, he is going to become a king. But in the simplest plot-driven sense, Ariel's aim is probably to draw Ferdinand away from the shore and toward his fateful meeting with Miranda. Ferdinand's central question to Miranda when he meets her is whether she is human and, if we read the word maid, M-A-I-D, for its sexual connotation, a virgin. Quote unquote, my prime request, ellipsis, is, O you wonder, if you be maid or no. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 424 through 426. That is a question with institutional significance. Ferdinand wants to make Miranda his queen. As for the term wonder, the prince lights upon the etymological significance of Miranda's name, which in its Latin passive periphrastic form, Miranda est, can be translated, she who must be wondered at. Prospero, while inwardly delighted, knows that the prize must not be won too easily, and that the young man has not yet earned the right to succeed him in his daughter's affections. He will test Ferdinand, even accusing him of usurpation, something obviously of concern to Prospero since he has been the victim of that offense. Aside from stealing the King of Naples' title, blusters Prospero to Ferdinand, quote-unquote, thou, ellipsis, hast put thyself upon this island as a spy to win it from me, the Lord on it. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 452 through 455. The prince draws his sword against Prospero in despite of the old man's magic, and quickly realizes that violence is not the way to get out of this fix. Act 1, Scene 2, line 464. In fact, his attitude takes a turn as he observes that all his present losses and concerns, quote-unquote, are but light to me, might I but through my prison once a day behold this maid. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 488 through 490. This quick adjustment shows patience, self-restraint, and nobility of character. As for Miranda, she is as taken with Ferdinand as he is with her, so much so that it's hard not to be reminded by this scene of Christopher Marlowe's famous line from Hero and Leander, quote-unquote, whoever loved that loved not at first sight. Like a good Renaissance Neoplatonist, Miranda is sure that such a handsome prince could never mean anyone harm. Quote-unquote, there's nothing ill can dwell in such a temple. Act 1, Scene 2, line 456. Ferdinand is a fine young man, but if Miranda is to become a proper Neapolitan queen someday, she must learn that the good and the beautiful don't always coincide. That Miranda shows promise is obvious from her remark to Ferdinand just before he is ordered to follow along after Prospero. Quote unquote, be of comfort, my father's of a better nature, sir, than he appears by speech. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 495 through 497. She has already learned that her father is not easily reducible to the man he seems to be. Thanks for listening. The date of this audio recording is Friday, May 30th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations, I have relied on the Norton Shakespeare 3rd edition, 4-volume, genre-based format.